And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
All right, listeners, thank you so much for coming back and joining us for yet another episode of Startup Hustle. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. My name is Lauren Conaway, and I am founder and CEO of Innovate Her KC. And today we have with us an incredible PR communications mind by the name of Tanya McKenzie. Tanya is founder and just an amazing strategist behind Sand and Shores. So we're going to be talking to her today. Tanya, thank you so much for being here with us today.
No, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to have this conversation.
Me too. I've actually I saw the booking information come through and I was looking over your info and I was like, oh, this is going to be a good one. I can feel it already. You kind of get an instinct. And I was just very excited. So I'm going to go ahead and hop right into it. And I'm just going to say, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, about your journey, how you came to do what you do and why you do what you do?
All right. So Tanya McKenzie here from San Jose, California. They call that the Silicon Valley now. Back when I was growing up, it was an area where we used to, you know, pick cherries and apricots, and now there's nowhere to park. So, you know, being able to see how a city kind of transforms was incredibly interesting. Went to Cal State Northridge. I was there after the earthquake. Not sure if you guys are familiar, but you know, we had some pretty large earthquakes here in California in the 90s, and it basically tore down the school. So I worked for the athletic department, and I was a part of the referendum building team that put together the plan for how we were going to rebuild some of the school. So learning how to kind of package up a story or your vision to be able to sell it to a community to get them to buy in was a part of my early education, early leadership exposure. And the first time it didn't pass, I think the second or third time it did. So if you see the campus now, you know, it looks incredibly different. And that kind of teaches me also, you know, sometimes you try to sell people things and you sell them what you want them to have. Sometimes you got to sit back and become a listener and hear what it is that they want, you know, and put those things together to represent back to them. And you really should do it right the first time. But, you know, lessons are learned in college. You learn a lot about leadership, how you navigate in life, how you balance a social life and work and your educational aspirations, time management, decision making, all of those cool things. So with that, you know, my early career, I've always been in kind of sales, marketing, advertising. And when I moved back out here to Southern California from the Bay Area, my first opportunity was with Southland Publishing. It was a magazine newspaper in West LA, so the Santa Monica, Marina Del Rey area. And, you know, they really weren't using technology as much as I would have liked to see since we were now in Silicon Beach. So I started my own magazine. That went off great. It was a real estate agent magazine out here in the South Bay where I live because I really wanted to work and play where I lived. I think that's important, right? And if you are someone that, you know, is into leadership, you understand that your role in your community is pretty important. So started that magazine out here, started making a lot of my business connections, decided I don't really like advertising, definitely not real estate. But being able to help some of my advertising clients do PR because they recognize that you need more than just an ad or marketing to get people to know, like, and trust you. So being able to take what they're doing and build stories around them to bring them clients that wound up being their raving fans, you know, that's really how you grow your business, through raving fans. I just love storytelling. I'm able to recognize kind of the greatness in people or those cool things about their story that maybe they didn't even recognize to help them tell that to their target audience to help them grow their business. So, you know, I started Sand and Shores, and when you start your own business, you are able to decide what kind of clients you deal with. You're able to decide who you fire, who you don't want to work with. Sometimes that goes with maybe missing out, but did you really, if it was something that you felt like you wouldn't be successful at, or you wouldn't kind of give your best effort, or you guys wouldn't work well together, you're not a perfect fit, you know, learning all those things and how you build a business. That's kind of how I got to the point to where I am now with Sand and Shores. And that is working primarily with civic organizations, law enforcement, political characters and organizations, and nonprofits. They always have an amazing story to tell to their target audience, which is the community that they serve. Sometimes they don't always know how to tell that story or explain to them the good things that they're doing for their community members. And that's where Sand and Shores comes in. We're able to connect our clients with the communities that they serve through stories and through opportunities to really narrate what's going on and how they are improving quality of life.
That is absolutely amazing. So first of all, I want to say something really quick. And when you used the phrase raving fans, I kind of started laughing in my head because I use that phrase all the time. So my background is in marketing and ops, but from the marketing standpoint, I have often told my clients, you know, you don't want to create customers. You want to create brand advocates, and you want to create those raving fans that you're talking about. So I just thought that was really cool. I knew that we would have a vibe that we would understand each other. So I think that one of the really important, you said a lot of really important things in that kind of opening statement, but one of the most important things that you talked about was how as a leader and an entrepreneur, your role in your community is important. And I think it's really fantastic and just incredible that you got to serve as an example, you know, helping your community through some really tough stuff, you know, earthquakes and crises. And but I guess I'm curious, how has your community served you as you've become an entrepreneur and a leader and come into your own with Sand and Shores?
How has the community served me? You know, there, if you are open to it and you become a better listener than speaker, you're able to pick up plenty of gems out there from individuals that are very knowledgeable and well-versed in the community, in the political play, in the growth, in the history of a community. And those are all things that you need to be able to move forward with whatever it is that you're doing, right? If it's, you know, understanding how maybe certain businesses were around and then they failed. Well, what caused them to fail? That helps you in not making those mistakes or correcting course if things are wrong. If, you know, someone was doing amazing or seen as a hero in the area, and then they became someone that people didn't like and notorious, what did that look like? That helps you to be able to kind of put parameters around how you move forward. So the community has been receptive. I'll tell you this, it's a fickle area. So they were very apprehensive at first. And many people could have taken that as maybe it was a racist thing. I actually look at it like people were trying to see what you were about. So when I first moved here, I think people were trying to see what I was about. Who was I? Am I consistent with what I'm delivering? Am I going to show up not just for the fun stuff, but for the work? And when you do, they are receptive. And then they invest in you, not just financially, but with time and with energy. And then when you're putting out projects and you're putting out events and ideas, they are very welcoming and supportive. So, you know, it's a very you know, give and take. It's a win-win when everybody is doing what they're supposed to in a community. We put out good work, we work hard for the community that we care about, and we all look to be leaders in our industry. And when you do that, the support comes. And I think that's how they have served me best. And then, you know, there's being elected for leadership positions. Those are accolades, really. And it took me a long time to recognize that. But when others tell you, I am looking to you to do something bigger than yourself, you can't help but to take a moment and recognize how integral that is in your personal growth and to the potential of what the city has to offer, or the town, or the company, or the community, you know? So I think trusting in me once I decided to step up in certain leadership positions. And again, those that have been here and done it and won in business, personally, socially, and politically, and invested their time and their knowledge in me, that really says a lot. It says a lot, and it can't go, it can't be taken for granted.
That's absolutely incredible. And I think the core of what you're talking about is building trust within your community. And I think that, you know, as an entrepreneur, as a leader, as anybody who's looking to make an impact within a community, that building of trust is just so key. If you're ever going to succeed, if you're going to really build something that can last. And I love that you had the patience and the wherewithal to do that. So one of the things that you talk about is accepting accolades. And I think that as a woman, one of the things that I have heard about women who take leadership positions, that often they have to be asked multiple times. And I think that women sometimes have a difficult time accepting accolades. And I mean, there are any number of reasons, you know, societal pressures, you know, we're often looking, we have so much on our shoulders, we're looking to the next thing. So let me ask you this, how have you become comfortable with that level of recognition, with, you know, stepping up and saying, you know, moving beyond imposter syndrome and saying to yourself, I deserve this, I am capable, I can do this, I can be a leader?
I think one day I was actually looking at my body of work for whatever reason. I wrote a book, I'm an author, and looking at my body of work, and I recognized, you know, in my 20s, I was actually in a pretty prominent position in the Bay Area, right? I was Supervisor Federal Glover had appointed me to his youth commission. That's a political position. And I didn't recognize back in those days how important that was, looking at my career now. And I was talking to my husband about it, and I was like, there are people that try to get on a commission in their 40s, 50s, and 60s and can't do it. That is something that I have actually taken for granted. Not only that, but then I am also a publicist, a PR consultant, and I am teaching and preaching for other women to grab their moment. You know, grab the spotlight. It's yours. You deserve it. So how can I not practice what I preach? It's a very hard thing. You know, you're telling someone, you know, bask in the glory that you deserve. You know, let me be your cheerleader because you work really hard and you're amazing. But then I'm shying away from the accolades of the work that I've done. And it was in those moments where I decided, you know, I really have to stop for a moment and appreciate the road traveled. And that also gives us time to look at what we've learned. So if we don't really celebrate our wins, we're also not acknowledging the lessons that we've learned, because that's what life is all about. Every time you take a step forward, you've learned something new, you've climbed some hurdle, you've moved past something that was blocking you. And if we don't do that, you know, we leave a lot of stuff on the table. And we tell kids all the time, you know, you go out there on the field and leave it all on the field. Well, in this life, particularly as a professional woman, we have to every time go out there on the field and leave it all out there. And every presentation, show up at our best. And, you know, if we're running for some type of election, give it all you got. Well, when you do, and you actually accomplish those things, yeah, we need to celebrate this. We need to celebrate this. So, you know, I really just decided I can't preach something, teach something, and consult on something that I'm not doing myself. So, you know, just lessons learned and understanding that I also have the opportunity to teach others how to move forward if I can actually acknowledge my own ability to do it. And it just, you know, it kind of works in that fashion.
That's amazing. I love that so much. So speaking of acknowledging accomplishments, so real quick, what's the name of your book and where can we find it?
The book is A Child's Memories of Cartoons and Murder. I am actually a gun violence survivor, sexual assault survivor twice. And that was another thing. After a while, I looked back and I said, you know, there are people that may not have been able to move past these types of things. So things that I had maybe, I won't say hidden, but not really touted or talked about, or I talked around it or talked about it vaguely. You know, there was opportunities missed to teach lessons and to provide substantial support to others that have gone through trauma. So, you know, wrote the book and it has served as a testimony for many women now.
Well, thank you so much. I think it's really important to acknowledge that sharing experience of that kind of depth and breadth and that kind of experience is just really, it can be a very difficult and draining thing, but really important for those who are, you know, going through it or who have gone through it so that people know they're not alone. So first of all, thank you for sharing that story, you know, or I guess multiple stories since it happened to you. Thank you for that. So where can we find the book? Is it on Amazon?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other national carriers.
Okay. Amazing. So one of the things that I want to, and this is kind of an interesting segue, but, you know, as someone who is well-versed in PR and communications, you are kind of a master of talking about difficult things and finding a way to message difficult things. You know, you cater to, you said, you know, political organizations and civic organizations. And I think right now our country, you know, we're at a time of great upheaval. I never want to use the word unprecedented times, because it's just everybody says that. But you know, you are working with organizations that right now they are addressing things like, you know, a pandemic. They're addressing civil unrest and Black Lives Matter and this quest for equity. What has that been like working with organizations that have had to kind of pivot and get really intentional about their messaging in response to things that are happening?
It, for me, it's amazing because that's what I enjoy doing. I enjoy, and I live in a space where I like to simplify complex issues through conversation. And that was part of my book, right? It was difficult to write, but being able to use many of the events, being able to use many of the actions taken to hurdle obstacles, those are things that I'm able to talk about, let's say on my book tour, and then in some of the work that I do out in the streets with domestic violence or youth trauma recovery, things of that nature. I have to be able to and comfortable with having open conversation about things that are difficult to talk about, okay? Even decisions like, you know, outing people in my family for things that had happened. Okay, not much gets more difficult than that. Most of the time these days with a lot of the unrest, you know, people are talking about things that are distant from them or things that people have done that aren't related to them. I actually had to be open and honest about things that took place in my own life that, you know, it could be kind of embarrassing. But if we can do that what I'm trying to show people is we can talk about these larger issues that really will have larger and better solutions. So with Sand and Shores, for the most part, I'm on the community engagement board with Redondo Beach Police Department. And, you know, one of the things that we like to do is have the conversations that allow for more clarity and trust between the police department and the community. Okay. Well, how do you do that? Well, there has to be some level of transparency. How do you do that? Well, you have to have conversations and be open and honest. So these are all one step at a time, but it's based on the fact that you want there to be solutions. You want it to be better than it was before you started. So wherever you start from, your open, honest conversation can only make it better, even if it's agree to disagree. I've been putting together panels that address many things that people are afraid to ask other people. Yes, what is it like being a Black woman in a city with only 2 or 3% African Americans? Okay, well, let's talk about that. And for me, I facilitate those conversations and let other people talk about it. I'm pretty good at finding, you know, that that trigger to open it up even more. So it's been a busy time, but it has been so rewarding just in the fact that many things that may not have been said based on my work, they were able to come out and, you know, then we can deal with that. So I had recently, you know, on my podcast, an old friend of mine, he's with the Cochran firm and he's very much into certain things that we're talking about now, like qualified immunity and police unions. African-American guy from the Bay Area who has done well for himself, but being able to express clearly what it is that we're looking for, right? What does this situation need? And now it's not from just a personal perspective, it's from a legal perspective. What does this and that mean that maybe not everyone else understands? So all that being said, it is a very trying time for people that are afraid of how things make them feel and expressing that. It is a trying time for people that are afraid of change because it's going to come. It is a trying time for people that just don't want any movement. And that's on both sides, right? There are some people that are just comfortable with what it is. But knowing that there is going, change has to happen. That's one of the only things that's consistent in this world is change happens. So I say buckle up, open up, and find some resolution with your feelings, with your thoughts, and with the change that's going to happen.
Well, I think that is such an eloquent way to put that. So one of the things that I like to address is the fact that So not too long ago, a friend of mine by the name of Michelle Watley, she's founder of an organization here in Kansas City called Shirley's Kitchen Cabinet. And their job is to help women of color, particularly Black women, find their political voices and help them to stay informed in political arenas so that they can amplify their impact within our communities. And so one of the things that I have heard her speak to on multiple occasions is the fact that often Black women in the quest for civility, mm-hmm. in some of the conversations, sometimes their voices get lost. And so just as a for instance, you know, a few years ago, the Me Too movement was coming to dominance within our cultural conversations. And I think a lot of people seem to forget that the Me Too movement was actually founded by several Black women. You know, the Pride movement and the Pride Parade was actually started as a result of the work of a Black trans woman. And sometimes that gets lost in our cultural narrative when we're talking about these really important topics. So I'm just wondering, you know, as a Black woman, I just want to ask the question, you know, how important is civility when we're talking about these issues, and how can we maintain productive conversation when so often these things are heated and so often these things are very uncomfortable, and people don't like discomfort, I don't think. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
You know, I was speaking yesterday or the other day with my husband about privilege. I know right now that word is a trigger word, right? You have white women that feel like it's insulting when you say, you call them Karen, or, you know, it's, they're in a privileged situation, or, you know, the name calling, one, it's unnecessary, but sometimes it takes time to explain to people what you're talking about. So you might want to do that first. You might want to preface it. So I said to my husband the other day, I said, you know, you've been in a privileged situation for a while in regards to, I can't even remember what we were talking about, but all that means is, and the look on his face was crazy, but I had to say all that means is, this is something that you have lived your life not recognizing is a problem for me. So just because it's not a problem for you doesn't mean that it's not a problem for me. And where we meet at, me and him or other people in this country, is recognizing that everybody's issue is not the same, but we have to find a way to acknowledge if that is a problem for you and I am part of the problem, then let's find a solution. So you start with an explanation sometimes instead of a name calling. And then you proceed to being able to explain in a way that's not so magnified what it is that you are suffering from or suffering with or having a hard time dealing with or has had a traditionally hard time dealing with. There's a way to communicate to people without it being so contentious, right? And we also have to learn to listen to hear and not listen to respond. Because the minute certain trigger words now are said, there's a response instead of an opportunity to sit in that and recognize what someone is saying. If I call you ignorant, I'm not saying you can't comprehend it. I'm saying this is something you don't know. Literally, that is the definition, right? So there's an opportunity for us to be better listeners, sitting in something and kind of feeling that before we immediately respond. The message gets lost once triggers have been activated. It just does. So maybe we step back. Maybe we table that conversation. But we are never going to get anywhere as long as we're totally offended by everything that someone says, and we don't acknowledge that something can be a problem for me that you have absolutely no comprehension of why it's a problem at all. So it's going to take work. It takes work on both parts. And sometimes that's why there's best that there is a mediator or a third party or, you know, someone else involved in certain conversations, because we have such a hard time. We are so defensive and everybody is afraid of being wrong instead of being better.
Yeah, no, I think that is a very eloquent way to put that. I do think it's important to acknowledge, you know, as you said, privilege is one of those trigger words. And so there are people that they hear that word and I think they automatically assume that if I say you have privilege, that I'm saying that you have had things easy, that you've had things handed to you, that you have to work. And that's simply not true. I think privilege is just an acknowledgement that your experience has not been made harder by certain factors. So, you know, as a woman, if you have male privilege in my sphere, just know that, you know, yeah, you've worked hard, you have, you know, you've accomplished, and there are so many things that you've done. But that being said, you know, there are obstacles that you have not had to overcome related to your gender. And the same can be said for skin color. You know, as a white woman, there are obstacles that I will never have to encounter. And so I think that the responsibility comes to the individual who has a certain kind of privilege to not only acknowledge that, but to also acknowledge that, you know, if you are telling me about your lived experience, I need to believe you and I need to take you at your word and not minimize those experiences that have brought you to where you are. And I just want that to be a part of that narrative and conversation. And I think that you do an incredible job of kind of explaining that in a way that makes sense. So thank you for that.
And I love that you said male privilege, right? Because that's a thing. That's a thing.
Sure.
But you have to be able to, they may not even understand that. But yes, you have had the privilege of not having to miss 9-12 months because our family expanded. I did that. You have had the male privilege of being able to, you know, be brought into a room where there's other males and we were left out, because that has been obvious. And we must be able to move forward with the other types of privileges in a conversation, at least to acknowledge there is a difference, there is imbalance, there is something that's missing. And that's really all there is. There's an element that's missing. Something that's over here is not over there. And, you know, it's so interesting. I love that you said male privilege. That was great. I think about that all the time.
Yeah, well, and I think so one of the things that Innovator Casey focuses on is intersectional feminism, like making sure that we need to change the narrative. And so the example that I always use when I'm trying to explain this to someone is the fact that so you know, 2020, it is quote unquote 100 years since women got the vote. And that is the narrative that we craft, and that is what people say, and we get really excited about, you know, as women, like, hey, we can vote, fantastic, that's great. And I'm really psyched about that, of course. I love to vote. I always get my sticker. But that being said, in actuality, it is 100 years since white women got the vote. Right. Women of color, indigenous women, black women, Asian women, like, they didn't get the vote until many years later. And so when we craft this narrative that automatically excludes swaths of the population, we're not being truthful to ourselves, and we're not acknowledging this lived experience and this lived shared history. Like, this actually happened. And so we need to acknowledge it so that we can move past it and be better, right?
Yep.
And that's not an attack on any one population, but it is asking for acknowledgement, and it is asking for the narrative to change so that we can acknowledge our history.
Yes. I love that.
Yeah. So, well, and I could talk about this all day, but I know it, I think it's so important. But one of the things that I really, really want to talk to you about, and it's somewhat related, is your journey to leadership and your journey to entrepreneurship and your journey to where you are today as a woman. And I'm really interested in that. And I'm wondering if you have, you know, some words of advice or some, I'm sure you have some very profound thoughts tucked away in a brilliant mind of yours about being a woman leader and what that means to you.
Whatever I thought was proven 100% correct once we got into this COVID crisis and we see the results of the women-led countries and the men-led countries, okay? It is very clear that these countries that are led by women are doing much better than the countries that are led by men. So with all that being said, I implore every woman to take the opportunity to speak up and step out on what you know is true. And when I say that, it's important to acknowledge that I I think growing up, you know, you see traditionally that women take a backseat to men in business, even in the household. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm a firm believer in some traditional household roles, right? I love being a mom. I love being the woman of the house. I'm not trying to be the man, but I'm also the one that uses the hammer and the toolbox. So that lets you know I'm pretty capable, right? I'm capable of doing some things that men traditionally do. And that also lets me know there's a lot of things that I can do and probably better than some of the men out there. And when you take a chance on yourself and you see that, man, I was right, or you've even lived with some regrets, like I wish I would have done that, or I wish I would have brought that idea forward. When someone else brings it forward and it worked, you start to acknowledge where maybe you could have been in those seats. So I say all that to say, if there's something that you are passionate about, if there's something that you're really good at, don't be afraid to take the steps to move past, man or woman, because we're smart. We are tenacious. We raise families. We have babies. We go through it. Okay. There is statistics behind the fact that women are the most abused and the most sexually assaulted and the most left behind and took the longest to get the vote. And we're still here. And in so many positions and opportunities, we have excelled. And with that being said, if you just take a look around and know that you have other women that support you, whatever it is that you want to do, I say go out and make it happen. We have to stop being afraid to ask for what we want. And then you can show them sometimes. Forget asking. Look, this is what I want. So this is what I'm here for. I had to learn that lesson. Once you get so frustrated with asking and not getting the answer you want, then it just becomes, let me carve out what I want. And then I'm going to carve out this path on how I'm going to get it. And when you're strategic about your life, you know, it kind of falls in place. Yeah, we get knocked down, we get right back up, get back on that path, and let's move forward. Women in leadership positions is essential because we think different. And that's important. Like, we cannot continue to downplay how important it is to have a higher level of humanity and emotional connection in the things that we do. And for so long, those are things that were kind of, you know, put in the back burner, like, you know, women are too emotional. They're so attached. Yeah, we're attached, but we also know how to treat people well. But we're also nurturers. And we don't just nurture each other. We nurture the projects that we're working on. We nurture and pour love into the business that we're trying to grow. So all of the things that make being a woman so, you know, for some, a deterrent to bring into leadership positions, those that recognize greatness are excited to bring those voices, excited to bring those emotions, excited to bring all of those characteristics into any opportunity that they are looking to excel in. So yeah, it's tough. And many times they look past you, but you know, you have to know at this point, you got it. If you want it, continue to build on your education and experience for it and go out and get it. Pave your path, get strategic, and also, we have to support each other. And I have been blessed enough to have women in my circle that support me. And you know what? I do the same. So it's important. It's something that we have to do. And I promise we're better together.
Yes. No, so the whole time you've been talking, and like, I feel ridiculous because I know that people can't see me, but I've just like nodding my head furiously. Like, wow. Like everything you said, I was like, yes. Yes.
Yes. We have to. And that's what we need to do from now on. Yes. Instead of, I don't know, maybe. No, it's yes. Oh, that's what you want to do. Let's go. What do you need from me to help you get that? That needs to be our comeback from now on.
Yeah. So I love that. And I think that what you're saying is so important. I will say, so this is actually not the conversation that I intended to have when we started this recording session, so we we've kind of taken a tangent, and I think a very necessary and important one, and I'm very glad that we've done so. But I do want to circle back just a little bit, and I want to come back to your core message. And I just want to say, or I want to ask you, why is what you do important for entrepreneurs, business owners, and leaders?
Everyone needs a cheerleader. Being an entrepreneur and being a public relations consultant is important because, again, it helps me have the ability, the platform, and the tools to help others tell their story. Many times people don't recognize how important or what kind of dynamic impact their story, their survival, their, you know, rise through flames will be able to help or motivate the next person. They don't recognize how the story in their business is what actually, you know, attaches people to them. And being able to help people do that brings me a level of joy and satisfaction. So that's one. But the entrepreneurial part of it, oh my God, you know, from understanding how your taxes are done all the way to how important entrepreneurs are to this country. And again, the opportunity to decide what kind of people I want to work with, what kind of people I'm best suited to work with, what kind of people need me to help them get to their next level is incredibly important. And being able to build a legacy for myself, for my kids, and the community that I serve is incredibly important. And all of those things is what entrepreneurship is about. Being able to collaborate with others doing great things, being able to contribute to the community that I live in, being able to contribute to a greater conversation, a larger conversation, a regional conversation or national conversation, or even beyond that. But all of those things you can't really do when you work for someone else, unless you know, are in a particular position. And there's very few of those, right? Or you have it, you're still being an entrepreneur outside of your job. So having the luxury and the freedom to be able to do those things and help others be able to do it is just incredible. It's just an incredible feeling on a day-to-day basis. No matter how hard it is, no matter how much you know, you have to sacrifice to make it work, when you take a step back and look at what you've built, what your name is on, what your work has poured into, it's one of the most rewarding things I think I've ever felt.
Absolutely. I have to tell you, entrepreneurs are comprised some of the greatest people I've ever known. You know, they are resourceful and creative and passionate. And so I love being a part of Startup Hustle, you know, because I get to talk to entrepreneurs all day, every day. And it's just, it's such a blessing. And I love that it seems like you are just as passionate and just as in love with the concept of entrepreneurship. I just think that's really cool.
You know, there are a bunch of people that are problem solvers. We don't have a choice. We're putting everything we have into something, hoping that it comes to fruition. We can't very well wait for other people to come solve our problems. And those are going to come, right? So you wind up connecting with other people that have been creative and strategic in finding resolution to issues that some people will never even understand because they work for someone. So, you know, you have a tribe of entrepreneurs that work together to help each other find solutions and move their businesses forward and move their quality of life forward. When we're done working 20 hours a day, you know, there's a joy in that.
Yeah. No, I love that. Well, so we're coming up on time here, and I don't know if you've ever listened to an episode of Startup Hustle, but mm-hmm. when I am blessed to host and I get to talk and chat, one of the things I like to do is I like to ask a silly question. And so my silly question is going to be, what's your superpower?
Peach cobbler.
All right. I know, so, I need a little bit of elaboration on that.
My brother's in the military. My son is in college, and I can make them fight by making peach cobbler. It's the one thing that they both show up for. when I cook it, and it is amazing. And I got that from my mama. So, you know, it brings people out the woodwork, people I ain't seen in a long time. So when I really want to, you know, get the crew together, yes, I put together a little peach cobbler and great things happen.
Do you serve it warm with ice cream?
I let them eat it however they want. I like mine a little room temperature, but yeah, a gallon goes missing every time it shows up. So, you know, it's to each his own. It teaches them.
All right. Well, I love that. And I have to say, so the next time I make it up to Redondo Beach, you're going to make some peach cobbler, right?
Absolutely. And we'll head on over to the beach and do what we talked about earlier.
Amazing. Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate this conversation, Tanya. These are the kinds of conversations that fuel me. So thank you so much for being with us here today and for sharing your story. And, you know, I am so thrilled that you were able to join us. Thank you.
I appreciate the time, and I've enjoyed the time with you and learning more about the organization too. I'm excited to dig in a little bit more on that.
Yay. I'm so glad to hear it.
Yes,
well, all right. Thank you, listeners, for being with us for yet another episode of Startup Hustle Podcast. Once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle was sponsored by Fullscale.io. And just know that you can find us on Instagram at Startup Hustle Podcast or check out our YouTube channel. Hope to see you soon.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.